we're your hosts. I'm Diane Bortoletto.
And I'm Monique Chicago. Let's do it.
Hello, hello, and welcome to And Away We Go, F1 Podcast, a Formula One podcast that goes beyond the track limits to talk about travel, food, and lifestyle surrounding the sport. I'm Diane Bortoletto, your pre-Drive to Survive Formula One fan, and today I'm in the city, in Perth.
And I'm Monique Chicago, your post-Drive to Survive fan, and today I'm in Stavanger in the southwest of Norway.
Hi, Mon. Oh, another exciting race with the Monza, the Italian Grand Prix that we've just held.
Do we call it exciting?
Well, there was a lot. There's a lot to talk about. But exciting, yes, for me, seeing the Tifosi. Like, that for me is, yeah, just seeing those passionate Italian fans just lining the streets of Milan on the grid after the race. I mean, there's no other race on the,
quite
the
like
calendar
it
that has a spectacle like it. It's phenomenal.
I must say, even just the pre-show, watching the pre-show before Monza, the feelings, the vibe that I was getting through the TV, it was immaculate. It just seems like such a wonderful destination and racetrack for a race. So I will give you that. I did find, because I watched the F2 and F3 races this weekend as well, they were hectic. And so I was under the impression that the F1 race would probably be quite hectic in the sense that there would be a lot of offs and overtakes and stuff like that. You know, F3, I think there were 6 or 7 DNFs, same as F2. And that didn't happen. But yes, lots to talk about in the F1 race. Where do we start?
Qualifying, Max breaks the lap record for Monza, qualifying the fastest lap ever seen on the circuit to take pole position. It should be said that Lando qualified in second and also broke the track record, but wasn't quite as fast as Max, so Max holds that record. And then, yeah, we had Oscar in third and Charles Leclerc in the Ferrari in fourth on the grid. So I was expecting a very spicy start, you know, first lap, and I guess it was a bit spicy.
Yeah, I was very excited to see Max take out pole position because we're in this era of Max not dominating. That's the McLarens, obviously. The McLarens are dominating right now. And of course, we're very happy whenever Oscar gets pole. We're never ever going to, and we're never ever going to be like, oh God, what a boring race. Oscar won. We're just a little bit biased there. We will admit, we always admit. Yeah, just a tiny bit. But to see Max take that pole position, you know, he's fighting hard in that car this year. It's not a cut and dry championship for Verstappen this year. So I was really happy to see him take pole, you know, other reasons for that too, but very happy to see him take pole.
Well, I mean, it kind of felt good to see Max so excited again. Like, I've got to admit, that was something that I found myself liking seeing that, where I'm not Max Verstappen's biggest fan, but I was actually cheering for him this weekend, which is weird. It surprised even myself. So,
and I think it does have a lot to do with seeing the joy that it is bringing him rather than him just being, you know, just expecting that the win's going to happen because the car's really good. And to see him actually really enjoying or being happy or excited that he's put in the performance, it kind of translates to the people watching as well. You know, we feel that. It's not just like a, oh yeah, well done team.
Apparently he asked his crew to do some change to the car, which gave him a bit more performance in the car, which saw him obviously take pole position. And then, you know, he went on and took the race win as well. First time Max has won in a little while. So that was, again, good to see.
Yeah. And might I say, it was a Max Verstappen win of old time, 20 seconds ahead.
Yeah. Massive. Very dominant.
Yeah. Yeah. He just put in lap after lap. He kept beating his own fastest lap in the race. He just kept pushing and pushing and pushing and getting better times. You can't deny that that was a great race by Max. So
yeah, it was a great weekend by Max, the whole weekend really. So Max Verstappen fans will be very happy. But also in quali, just also want to give a shout out to Kimi Antonelli, who qualified in sixth.
Mm-hmm. And Bortoletto, who qualified in seventh.
Correct. Yeah, that was, you know, really good to see those two rookies up there. And Alonso, the old boy, in eighth in the Aston Martin.
It was a really, really good qualifying to watch. It was all so close as well. Like, I think there was only 0.5 of a second between like 18 or so of them. It was very, very, very close. And it was so nice to see things being shaken up a little bit with Bortoletto up there, with Kimi Antonelli making it into Q3. Hadja from last week did a phenomenal job. First podium.
The podium, exactly.
Yeah. And then he had his first Q1 exit of the season this week. So I think Monza really threw in a curveball, shaking things up, which was good to see in most respects. You know, you do have feel sorry for Hadja, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so. Who ended up starting in the pit lane with a new power unit. Mm. And Lewis Hamilton, of course, did qualify in fifth but had a five-place grid penalty, so ended up starting on the grid in 10th. It was so nice to see Lewis energized from the Tifosi and, you know, mm-hmm. it felt like that he was just soaking in all of that energy that they were giving him, all the love that they were giving him, and that was really nice to see. I actually thought he was going to pull something magical out of the bag. I mean, he finished the race in sixth place, so he did gain four places and had a really good race. And same with his teammate, Charles, not quite enough. He finished in fourth, and the reason being is that we had Max in first, Lando in second, and Oscar in third. But, my God, let's talk about it. Let's rip the Band-Aid off. Let's just talk about McLaren, for God's sake.
I can't deal.
Okay, let's just quickly recap what happened in case anyone's catching up and listening to this and it's not fresh in your mind. It was like five laps from the end and it might have been a bit more, actually six or seven. They, because of the gap between Oscar Piastri and Charles Leclerc, who was behind him, Lando was running in second place. The McLaren team decided to pit Oscar first so that he could come back out and come out in front of Charles. So they asked Lando, who was in second place, so ahead of his teammate, and Lando said, it's okay to pit Oscar if he's got the gap, that's fine, right? He had nothing to lose. His medium tyres were performing really well. So they pitted Oscar. He came back out. Top pit stop by McLaren.
1.9 seconds.
Mega, right? Super. I mean, 1.9 seconds. Can you just think, how do you change four tyres in 1.9 seconds?
It takes me longer to blink.
Exactly. Then they pitted Norris afterwards, and there was a mistake on Norris's pit stop. His pit stop was 4 seconds.
Mm. I think it was actually five.
By the time Norris exited the pits, Oscar was in front. So Lando was behind Oscar, and then the team came in and gave team orders and told Oscar to give Lando the place back. So Oscar would have finished the race in second. Oscar said on the team radio, a slow pit stop is part of racing.
Yes.
I didn't think that kind of counted. They kept referring back to Budapest.
Hungary.
Back to Budapest.
Which
is when the team did the same thing but in reverse order, but there was no mistake from anybody in the team. So it was not Lando's fault, not Oscar's fault. It was just the way that the cards fell. Lando got a mistake in his pit stop. It slowed him down. Oscar ended up taking second place and then was asked by the team to give it back. And he complied, which I don't know if I would have. This is and the title fight wasn't on in Budapest either. So there's lots of things that are not the same as Budapest. What do you think?
I feel like Max Verstappen on the radio summed up that perfectly. Yeah. He was like, they swapped over because of a slow pit stop. Huh, that's just racing. Yeah. And then his engineer was like, oh, I guess, you know, they're trying to keep it fair in the title fight. And I was like, that's not keeping it fair in the title fight. That is not, that's my opinion. It is not fair in the title fight. It is, okay, I can see it from both points of view. I can understand that the team have gone, oh, crap, we have screwed up and that has disadvantaged one of our drivers. So we're going to try and reverse that because we want this to be as fair as possible. I can understand that mentality, but I also absolutely do not understand that mentality because a pit stop is a part of racing, just like the DNF last week was a part of racing. Yes, it was awful for Norris. It was horrible. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants a DNF. But what are they? Did they go to the FIA and go, can we race that race again because we had a DNF? Oh, Oscar, yeah. Can you give up your points from that race because Lando had a DNF and that's not fair? No, it's a part of what happens in the race.
Initially when that happened, I was livid. I was screaming at the TV and just, how can McLaren do that to Oscar? Like, how can they favour Norris so much to do that to Oscar? But then seeing Oscar's reaction afterwards, and look, he is cool, calm and collected, Mr. Unflappable worldwide. I don't know if he was holding anything in or whether he just truly believed that I need the team more than the team need me kind of mentality and playing the right thing. But the fact that Oscar didn't seem angry about it and the fact that Lando said in the interviews afterwards, I didn't want this to happen. The team didn't want that to happen. None of us wanted this to happen, but this is the fairest thing to do.
Mm.
Look, there's only 3 points in it. So Oscar only...
Yes.
Well, 6 points actually, if you think of Oscar could be another 3 points
ahead.
I guess, yeah, so that's, I've come to terms with it a bit more and I'm less angry about it than I was initially.
You understand, but you don't understand. And that, like, that's my position. Like, I can understand and I can get why they did it and I can see the reasonings behind it and how that may come into play, but it also opens up a whole other can of worms. What happens in 2 races' time if something similar happens to Oscar? Is there going to be team orders then to swap them around?
They have to be consistent. They have to be consistent or they're going to run into mega, mega issues within that team. This whole papaya rules thing has been going from the start. And to be fair, I think the team have done a pretty good job at playing the papaya rules, if you like, enforcing the papaya rules. The drivers have been compliant. The team seem to be fair. Of course, we're biased to Oscar, so we want the best for Oscar. And if Oscar doesn't win the championship this year, yeah, we will be furious with McLaren for this will be just maybe one of a few things perhaps yet to come that we'll see Oscar.
And this is
potentially
the issue comes in is, okay, they've done this now. You have to make sure that this happens down the track as well. You know, like it now.
It's going to be consistent.
Exactly. Now, if something happens to Oscar, you need to give him back that spot. You need to favour him in that situation. And look, don't get me wrong. Norris was ahead of Piastri the entire race. So, yes, he deserved that spot because he had raced well. He was faster.
And the fact that he lost the place was not his fault. That was the team's fault. Yeah. So, but still, it's all racing, isn't it?
Exactly, exactly. And so this is where there's been so much talk and opinion around this topic because it's so, like, I love that McLaren are really trying to be fair in this title fight because they've got the best worst scenario right now. They've got the two best drivers.
The last time we had this situation was with Mercedes with Nico Rosberg and Lewis Hamilton when in the Mercedes dominant era, you know, where they had two drivers vying for the title. But this is different because no other team is even close. So it is really a two-horse race between Lando and Oscar at the moment. I'd love to hear Mark Webber's take on this.
Mm.
An unfiltered Mark Webber's take on this,
Yeah, Mark Webber after a couple of beers at the pub together. Take on it, not a Mark Webber. Yeah. Hello, I'm talking to the media. Take on it.
Yes. And for anyone who doesn't know, Mark Webber is Oscar Piastri's manager and has been for a long time and is also an 8-time Grand Prix winner. All right, final words on the McLaren situation.
My final words are if the championship comes down to 3 points, 2 points, 1 point, even 5 points, I will remember this. I will freaking well remember this. They are my final words.
Yeah. My final words are, McLaren better keep this consistent. They've built their bed, they've got to lay in it now, and they need to just keep this consistent between the two drivers. We didn't start the pod the way we normally start, Mon, with our three words for this race.
Mm. Yeah, well, now that we've spoken about it, it might give our three words more context, right? So happy to hear yours first.
I was going
to
say fast and frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, yeah. It was fast and furious because that's how I felt initially after the race, was furious, mm-hmm. but yeah, fast and a bit frustrating.
Yes, yeah. And I will say, Mamma Mia McLaren. They are my three words for Monza. Mamma Mia McLaren.
Yeah.
Far out.
All right. We got to stop talking about McLaren or we'll just go on and on and on and on for hours because it's frustrating. Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
So it was a tough race for Fernando Alonso, who did qualify well, but ended up with a DNF, and also Nico Hülkenberg, who didn't even start the race. So he gets a DNS, did not start, as opposed to did not finish. Yeah, on the formation lap, he was told to retire the car, so he didn't even make it to the grid.
I was very happy for Ferrari to see them have a bit of fight in them this week. And like you said earlier, to see Hamilton being really energized and doing well compared to some of his other races. I think that was wonderful.
I've got to say, it was a very exciting lap one, and never in my life have I cheered so hard for Max Verstappen to take the lead and maintain the lead. Looked like Norris got the better start, but Max got ahead and I was just screaming. And then there was a really good battle between Oscar and Charles Leclerc, you know, swapping third and fourth place a few times in those first couple of laps.
I was actually really happy with the way that the top three qualified. So obviously Max, Lando and Oscar. Obviously would have been happier if Oscar qualified in pole, but you know, we can't always have the wins. We can't always have the pole positions.
The time between them, we're talking hundreds, thousandths of a second, you know, like not even tenths, it's hundredths of a second. So it's
speed
like,
of light.
Yeah. Exactly. It's like it's crazy.
The way that they qualified in top three, I was quite happy with that because I was like, Lando is going to go hard after Verstappen in first. Verstappen's going to be defending so hard against Norris, and Oscar just has to kind of sit there and wait and see what happens. Let them kind of biff out the front and then take advantage of whatever happens there. But unfortunately, Leclerc came to the party and was ready to fight Oscar. Yeah. And I mean, I shouldn't have been surprised by that. Of course, everyone wants a good start and wants to, you know, better their positions. And so he
And of course, Ferrari won a podium in Monza. Of course, Ferrari won a podium in Monza, right?
Of course. So Oscar was kind of kept busy there with Leclerc, which opened up a gap between Verstappen and Norris. Well, Verstappen and Norris were ahead, and it opened up quite a gap between, I say quite a gap. Again, we're literally talking a second and a bit. And yeah, Oscar was stuck behind Leclerc, who didn't have the pace to keep up with the front two. So that kind of set the order for the rest of the race. But yeah.
Oh, shout outs to George Russell, who finished in fifth. We haven't even mentioned his name yet. Another Mr. Consistent on the grid. He's been putting in a solid race after solid race, just about each race weekend. Yeah, Lewis in sixth, as we mentioned. Alex Albon in seventh, as we mentioned. Gabriel Bortoleto, my cousin, Monty, not two, in the Sauber in eighth.
So proud of him.
Very, very solid race weekend from him. Kimi Antonelli in ninth in the Mercedes. And then, Isaac Hadjar in Racing Bulls. Right, in other news, our other favourite Australian Grand Prix driver who's no longer racing, DR, is announced his ambassadorship with Ford Racing. So, yes, he dropped a teaser on social media that had the world in a bit of a frenzy and, interesting move. But
also not super surprising, right? Because he loves America. Nah. His personality, people in America love him. So, it makes sense that he's kind of moved into an ambassadorship role with an American outfit. But I think it solidifies his stance as being done with racing itself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gunter Steiner, who's the ex-team boss of Haas, has bought a MotoGP team. So I think he's seen the writing on the wall because Liberty Media have recently bought the MotoGP championship, and Liberty Media are the ones that have been credited with Formula One's revival that it's been going through, the introduction of Drive to Survive, the introduction of the cost cap. But yeah, Liberty Media bought MotoGP, so we can probably expect to see similar things happen with MotoGP, and Gunter's got in and he's probably hoping for a ching-ching massive paycheck. Since all the Formula One, the valuation of every single Formula One team now is
ridiculous.
I think it's over. Yeah. Yeah. I think they're all over $1 billion in valuation now.
Wow.
And the last bit of news I have is Pierre Gasly's extended his contract. So, yeah, he'll stick with that team for several years yet.
I think that's a smart move by Pierre, because it's not that he's not a good driver. He's a great driver. He's just been stuck in this kind of crappy car, for lack of better words. And if he didn't sign on with Alpine for a longer-term contract, what were his options going to be? Except for leave Formula One. So it's smart. Everything changes next year. So you never
know
where
Alpine... They're getting a new power unit, that team as well, Alpine.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So you just never know where Alpine's going to be. You never know what would have happened if he had been like, sorry, you know, I'm not going to take this contract. I'm going to wait for another seat somewhere.
Yeah.
My general feeling is that his days might have been limited if he didn't re-sign. No word on that second seat in Alpine, though.
No, no word on that yet. Let's just see what kind of bombshells Briatore drops before the end of the season. I'm sure there'll be a few.
Yeah, well, I don't know where that new team principal is that he said they were going to get at some point. Are we shocked about that? No.
No. No, are we shocked that Colapinto's still there after his 5-race trial? No.
Are we shocked that Briatore did come out and say that it hasn't worked out as well as what they thought it would? Yes. Actually, very shocked that he finally did come out and say that. But all the other things, no, not shocked at all.
No. Not shocked at all. No. Oh, got to talk about Stefano Domenicali. My God. Did you hear him come out during the week saying that he thinks they need to look at the length of Formula One races, that they're too long for this generation, and that more sprint weekends?
And he was saying that the highlights are the most popular thing that people watch. Yes, because all your stuff is behind paywalls. That is why.
Yes, everything's behind a paywall, quite right. So there's that. But his argument of wanting to make the races shorter because that's what the audience wants, well, that's because the next generations have an attention span of like a gnat of like 3 seconds. Mm-hmm. And the longer races give you all that content. Formula One is also a test of endurance for drivers. Yes. When I say endurance, like that is high intensity at the top of human performance for 2 solid hours, mostly, unless you're in Monza, and that was the fastest race in history that we just had at 1 hour, 18 minutes. Normally, they're around the 2 hour mark, right? So,
do you know what my solution to this issue of the younger generation preferring the highlights and all that is? Who cares? Let them. Is my solution. Like, who cares? Do better. Sit there for 2 hours and what you can sit there and watch a 2.5 hour action movie at the cinemas. Do better.
Do they though? Or do they scroll half the time?
Potentially. Maybe that's the issue. It's not a pedigree. It's a Grand Prix. It's a lot, it's a big race. It's a grand, big race. Just deal with it. I mean, okay, so in other sports, cricket is an example, right? They have had to come up with other options to get more people interested to ensure the longevity of their game, which has been the 2020s, it has been blah, blah, blah. This is why we have sprint races. We've already done that. We've already made the shorter races for the people that have the attention span of a gnat.
Yeah, I quite like sprint weekends.
I love it.
That there's, I like that there's more skin in the game for the drivers on sprint weekends. And it's a relatively new introduction anyway, sprint races. So that's, yeah, that hasn't been around for very long either, only a couple of years. I think, no, don't even think about shortening the race. Yes, okay, not everybody watches practice, but practice, it is important.
There's nothing in practice.
No, that's right. There's no skin in the game in practice. But I do think that having practice is important for the teams and the drivers from a safety point of view. Also, it gives developing drivers a chance to jump in a Formula One car during one of the free practices, you know, reserve drivers and whatnot. And it also gives them a chance to, well, that's what it is. It's practice. They have limited testing days these days in Formula One. There's limited track time that they, the drivers and the teams can get in the car. So I think that you can't eliminate free practice just because people don't really watch it, according to Stefano Domenicali. I don't really watch free practice unless it's on at a friendly time in my time zone and I don't have anything else that I have to do. So,
I confess. But that's beside the point. Who cares if no one watches free practice? Free practice is free practice.
I mean, isn't Formula One making enough money as it is? Like, I mean, exactly. Do you really need to make more money?
And do you know what? That is what this whole issue is about. It is not about the fact that Formula One races have become irrelevant or people aren't enjoying them, or that's not the issue here. No. Stefano Domenicali is thinking about, our profits. How do we get more profits? If we get more people watching, that's more eyeballs, that's more money. Don't stuff with it just because of that. Like you said, there is enough money. There is enough money in F1. You do not need any more.
I just love Fernando Alonso's reaction when he was asked that question about the length of Formula One races. He said, it's like any sport. They're long, like a 90-minute football match. Mm-hmm. I don't sit there and watch every single minute of those 90 minutes. Sometimes I get up and go to the kitchen if there's a lull. And Max Verstappen was like, yeah, some races are boring and some races are really exciting. I think Stefano just needs to calm down.
Oh, absolutely. And if you're actually at the track and there's a lull in the racing and everyone's parading around in line, that's when you go get a beer. That's when you go to the toilet. That's when you're happy to line up for some food. Or like, it's just, I think it's a very, very presumptuous statement that has come from an ill-advised area is not the right word, but you get what I'm trying to say. I think it's just
is true that the younger generation do have a shorter attention span, apparently. Like, studies have been done and they do like those snippets, short snippets of content, which they're getting that on YouTube, they're getting that on social media, they're getting that in highlights. So
let them watch that.
Exactly. Monza. Closest main city to Monza, of course, is Milan. And did you see the scenes of Lewis and Charles in Milan? I think 40,000 fans or something turned up to the main square near the Duomo just to see them. And, yeah, that was so nice to see.
I did see someone had said there are two religions in Italy. Yeah. As like a caption to that photo. It was great.
Yeah.
They've got the Pope and they've got Ferrari.
So I've spent a little bit of time in Milan. I've been a few times. It's a fantastic cosmopolitan city with some beautiful sights and things to see and do. But how about you? Have you been?
I have. I was there for about a week, but I was working for a lot of it at a convention center and then spent 2 or 3 days actually in Milan. I'm not a big city person. Like, I prefer to go to smaller places. It's just more my vibe, but I actually did really love Milan. And I think Milan was known to be the fashion capital. So it really appealed to me walking down the streets and the kinds of things. I think that's just Italy in general as well, to be honest. The stores and the things in the windows, and obviously you've got beautiful, beautiful Duomo, and just next door to the Duomo. And
the Galleria. Yeah.
Thank you. Yes. And it's so famous because it's so beautiful.
Just the marble flooring of the Galleria is a work of art, and millions of people trample on it every single year, which is it is beautiful. And the Duomo, I believe it's one of the biggest churches in the world.
And it's such a sight to behold, right? I don't claim to have any, I mean, I'm christened as a Catholic, but I'm not a practicing Catholic, but I can appreciate the absolute beauty as to how special that place is.
One of the best things about the Duomo is that as a visitor, you can buy tickets and climb up to the roof of the Duomo, and you can sit on the roof. And that, I did that once years ago, and it was a sunny day. I think it was in spring, and it was just so nice just sitting up there and taking in the views. And yeah, that's a really nice thing to do if you're in Milan.
And I just feel like compared to some of the other major cities in Italy, I feel like Milan, it's not as grungy, let's say, as Rome.
No, it's not.
So it's got a completely different feel to it than what some, or like even Napoli. You know, Napoli is very grungy as well.
Oh my God, you're talking about, you may as well be talking about apples and oranges comparing those cities. They're just, I know it's the same country, but they are worlds apart. Milan is like the business center of Italy. Milan is where all the head offices are for all the major companies that do business in Italy. Milan is clean. Milan is functional. Yes. Milan has
Want to use that word. That's exactly what I felt.
It's true.
Yeah.
You know, Milan has a different character to Rome, and Rome and Milan both have very different characters to Napoli or Naples.
I'm a big fan of the cuisine in Milan or Lombardy kind of area. Some of the best. It's really good. So that made me like Milan a lot as well.
Yeah, it is quite different. Yeah, generally speaking, the north to the south of Italy
is so different.
Look, there is no such thing as Italian food, right? Mm. And every Italian will tell you that. It's Italian regional food. So every region has its own dishes, its own cuisine. In the north, around Lombardy and Milan, they don't use chili. They use less tomatoes. They use a lot more butter. They eat polenta. You do get seafood in the north, but less so in Milan, in Lombardy. Yeah.
Like most places, if you're on the coast, there's a whole lot more seafood.
Or by a lake.
Or by a lake.
Or rivers. So I guess some of the most famous dishes, if you're in Milan, you cannot leave Milan without eating risotto alla milanese, which is a saffron risotto. Beautiful. Very delicate. Cream. It's not made with cream, but it's luscious. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. In winter, you have ossobuco alla milanese, and then cotoletta. Mm-hmm. That is a massive pork cutlet. Usually it's beaten out. Yeah, so it's quite thin and big, still with the bone on, and they crumb it. And it's shallow fried. And they call it, the translation to English is elephant's ear, because it's usually huge. Massive, like an elephant's ear.
There was there's a particular risotto from Monza itself that's made with a very particular sausage from that area. I think it's very similar to like a Milanese, where it's very simple. They've just got this sausage in it as well. But being in Norway and trying to find that particular sausage, oh my gosh, good luck. Sorry. I didn't make that dish, but I think we've hit the nail on the head with those dishes in Milan.
And I always say, if you're going to eat in Italy, we know the food is unbelievably good, but you need to choose where you're going to eat quite carefully. If you are eating across the road from the Duomo, or if you're in Rome and you're near the Trevi Fountain or the Colosseum with a view, don't expect to get authentic Italian food. You're going to be fleeced and be given tourist menus and served probably mediocre food that's going to be overpriced. You need to get away from the tourist zones. You need to follow the Italians, which are pretty easy to do, because you can hear them for miles, right? And they always look
good.
And
you can see them for miles.
They're well-dressed people waving their hands, talking loudly. Just follow them, right? and see where they're going to eat. In Milan, you know, one of the tourist zones, which is quite close to the Duomo zone, is called Brera. Brera, and that is a really lovely neighborhood. I mean, it is touristy, but it's just full of places to eat and drink and bars, and there's a couple of museums there as well. So that is definitely a place to spend some time when you're in Milan. And again, just, I've eaten cotoletta in Brera a couple of times and it was good. It was not fine. It was good, right? So it's not, you're not always going to be served trash when you're in a tourist place.
If you've got a view of those
monuments,
of the monuments, then you know. And if the menu's in English only.
With pictures.
And it's got pictures. Yeah. Then you know.
Run a mile. Yeah, exactly. A couple of things that you need to do, especially as Formula One fans, when you're in Milan, you've got to go to the Ferrari shop, whether you're a Ferrari fan or not. The Ferrari shop, just near the Duomo there, it's just in that shopping precinct, just up from the Galleria. It's massive. It's like three levels, and it's not just, like, I didn't know that Ferrari made high heel shoes. They make trench coats. They make Ferrari branded everything, like watches, pencil cases, belts, as well as all the sporting attire and the team wear. There's also a massive Ferrari Formula One car. I think it's suspended in the like a mezzanine. But if you are going to Monza next year, that's me. I hope all going to plan, then yeah, staying in Milan is what you want to do. Milan actually has one of the nicest, most beautiful train stations I've ever seen as well. Milano Central is a work of art on its own right. Of course, the Last Supper, you can go see that in Milan.
Oh, I forgot I did that.
Yeah.
I forgot I did that. It was a very cool thing to see. I didn't care much for the commentary. It was cool to, like, what they were telling me about it. But it was a very, very cool thing to see and to understand how old it was and how long it took and just everything that went into it. And then to be so privileged to stand there and see that is phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal.
Just the access to artwork you have when you're traveling through a country like Italy is like it really is mind-blowingly incredible.
We've spoken about food, and for the record, I did actually cook a risotto milanese with osso buco
this weekend.
I did.
I thought you were on your honeymoon beach break hotel stay, wherever you're going.
It's
honeymoon.
Surprising.
How can there be a honeymoon when there's no engagement ring? There's no engagement. There's no wedding.
Too early for the baby moon. We still need another one of those. I should convince him that it should be in Milan, or because he likes Italy. But yeah, osso buco's ridiculously easy to cook, guys. It's
so tasty.
And it's so tasty. Literally all you need is the veal shanks. You need to chop up some celery, carrot, onion, garlic, put it all in the pot together with the tomato and the stock and the herbs and spices and la-di-da, and it cooks for an hour and a half on the stove while you're watching the game or more.
The race. The race. So, on low heat. And then, like, if you make it very saucy, which is what I tend to do, then you can cook some polenta and have that, or mashed potato as a meal, and then all the sauce, pasta. Later on in the week with it. So,
I'm going to make some meatballs tonight and cook the meatballs in the sauce and have it on top of polenta. So, it was a really easy dish to make. So, literally, we got back in the morning and then I just chopped everything up, put it in a pot while the race was on, and then cooked the risotto afterwards, because it doesn't take, like, all you need to chop up for the risotto milanese is some onion and some garlic. The rest you just put in as it's cooking. It's an easy dish to make. It looks... Oh, and I've made the gremolata for the top as well. It looks...
Oh, wow, all out. The gremolata really does make it.
I said that last night too. The gremolata is just parsley, garlic and lemon rind, but it really adds so much to the dish, and our parsley is overgrowing in the backyard. So, it was really quick and easy to do. So if you want something that looks impressive and... we'll knock the socks off your guests. Our guests loved it. It's a pretty sneaky one to do because it doesn't take that much effort.
No. So, and like you said, you can just let it cook, let it do its thing while you get on and watch the races. Speaking of races, we've got a break next week and then we're off to Azerbaijan, back
Cool.
Yeah, street circuit. So that will be interesting to see whose car favours that circuit, which drivers like that circuit, and how that goes. Now, after this race, Monza, we should say that Oscar Piastri still maintains the driver's lead. So he's 31 points ahead of his teammate Lando Norris. And then there's a gap of 63 points to Max Verstappen, who's third in the Drivers' Championship at the moment. So it really is Oscar and Lando in the title fight at the moment. There's still 31 points in Oscar's favour. And had team orders not been given and Oscar finished second, it would be 41 points in Oscar's favour.
We'll be back next week with another podcast. But for the time being, if you like what you listened to or watched, you can like, comment, rate on any of the listening platforms or YouTube. You can also follow us on social media platforms. We're on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and LinkedIn. Or you can email us at andawayyougof1podcast@gmail.com.
Thank you, Mon, and thank you, everybody, for having us in your ears. If you've got views on McLaren and their team orders, drop us a comment wherever you're listening to this podcast. Until next week, and until lights out.
It's lights out and away we go.
And Away We Go podcast is produced by Diane Bortoletto and Monique Ciccato.
Let's do it.